everyone. I'm Brian Conley of Hunters HD Gold, and you're listening to Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. This podcast takes a deep dive into what it takes to be a match director, manufacturer, sponsored shooter, or just an everyday shooter trying to win his or her first major. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Welcome back to another episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. Just got through sitting down with dinner with Eddie Garcia. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. And you?
Man, I'm doing great. Thanks for taking time to come back to the hotel and just relax a little bit. And let's learn a little bit about you. You didn't have time to make it to the range to do a podcast at the range. And I don't have the van with me while I'm here in Arizona, but it's been great to hang out with you a little bit. But let's go back a little bit. When did you even start shooting guns? What does this look like for you?
Well, obviously we had guns when I was a kid.
Did you? Okay.
But we weren't, I mean, it was like one of the type of things we go to the desert every now and then, you know, shoot some 22s. It didn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. But when I was 21, my friend that I grew up with since kindergarten wanted a gun for self-defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't really into guns. Just really wasn't. So he wanted to get one. So I was like, well, you know, we've been doing things for years and we've been friends since kindergarten. I'll buy a gun and we could go shoot on the weekends together. Just something to do. So we went out and bought, my first gun was a Smith & Wesson Sigma.
Okay.
And it was horrible. it was like $50 cheaper than buying a clock, right? Right. And so I was like, well, I'll just buy that.
Now, you said when you kid, you were in Arizona, in the desert. Was this Arizona?
It was, yes.
So you
born and raised here.
Born and raised in Arizona. In this area or what part of Arizona?
Pretty close. Phoenix. Okay. So Phoenix downtown. West Side Phoenix. So okay. Like 75th Avenue around there.
Cool. So when you went out to the desert to go shooting, was that private property, public property, or you had friends had property, or just went out and found the side of the road somewhere?
I'm pretty sure it was just on the side of the road because all this year was not here at that time.
Okay, fair enough.
So pretty much, I believe it was anything north of maybe northern,
okay,
which is all deserts.
Okay.
I remember when I was a kid,
right?
You know, the houses were being built,
right?
And there was like nothing out there. My dad was shooting prairie dogs with a 22 in the backyard.
Nice, very nice.
We just rode quads. We just rode right. bikes. Because all the houses were being built,
right,
and we always been chased away with the cops. But you know, you gotta remember, Brian, that was like 40 years ago. You know,
wow.
So a lot of things changed at that time.
So your dad was, you know, had a gun, 22 for shooting prairie dogs. So yeah. You've been around guns your entire life.
Well, I would say they were there,
okay,
but there was no such thing as, you know, we're gonna go over safety, we're gonna go over functionality,
right.
You know, we're going to make sure that, you know, you understand these and respect them. Mm-hmm. It was like, we knew they're in the closets and that was about it.
Okay. I can relate to that because my father had gun growing up and stuff like that. He would trade with, you know, his friends and stuff like that. But I never really, we never had to talk or go out and shoot together or anything. So I can relate with that. Did he take the factor of, the mystery factor out of it though?
No, not at all.
Okay.
So it was a type of thing where, you know, my dad, my mom would be shooting. Mm-hmm. And because we were so young, they'd be like, come on over, they'll hold the rifle.
Okay.
And I just press the trigger and like, okay, great. You know, you missed the can and move on.
Right.
It wasn't something that we did very often. I probably did it 3 times my whole lifetime.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
So we'll go back to your 21. And you fell in love with the Smith & Wesson.
Sigma,
excuse me.
It was wonderful.
And went out shooting. What was that like? You know, was it more like the wow factor at that point of the power that you have behind your hands? Or, you know, what really did that draw you in more at that point?
No, not at all. It was just something to do with my friend.
Okay.
And, of course, we had no idea what we're doing. We had no idea what target stands were,
right.
Targets, anything. We were just out in the desert, again, just setting up cans or trying to shoot rocks, mm-hmm. et cetera. So what happened was, so we did that for a while, and I was working at a company, and I had a friend that worked there. Believe it or not, his name was Will Smith, and he was former military, Rangers, Airborne, and he was really into self-defense.
Okay.
So I went up to him and said, hey, man, I got a gun. I'd be really interested if we could go out and practice. Maybe he could show me a few things. And he was willing to go out with me a few times.
Okay.
And we did. So he kind of, you know, showed me how to, you know, clean the gun, break the gun down. Because they don't teach you any of this stuff when you go buy the gun.
Right.
You just fill out 4473, you give them your money, and you move on, right?
Right.
So we started shooting together in the desert, a little bit at Ben Arie. Ben Arie has a static range, you know, the public range. Mm-hmm. And then we got into IDPA. So now remember, my friend Jeremy at this time.
Okay.
We're still kind of hanging around. We're still shooting, but now I'm kind of like more migrating towards Will because now I'm kind of getting more into this, right?
Right.
I'm understanding the responsibility of these things. I'm understanding that, you know, you got to respect them. You know, so I'm kind of going that route. You know, okay. I want to learn more about it. I'm interested now.
So what was that click or that light bulb that went off that made you interested? Was it when somebody said competition? Was that kind of the clicking factor? What was the clicking factor there?
Well, the main thing is, you know, we were getting more into the self-defense realm.
Okay.
I know we said IDPA is still a game, mm-hmm. but it was the only way we're able to go and, you know, use these items mm-hmm. underneath some type of stressful situation, right?
Right. How old were you at self-defense mentality?
Well, at that time, it was 21.
Okay. Because
I have the firearm.
So this is all still happening in the same year.
Yeah, because okay. I want to be responsible with it. You know, obviously I'm going to be carrying this thing, so I don't want to, you know, be like a statistic, right? You know,
what did your parents think about that when you told them you wanted to carry a gun?
You know, my mom didn't seem like she really cared at this time. You know, my mom and dad separated, so okay. I had a stepdad.
Right.
And, you know, he didn't think it was really responsible.
Okay. Well, you're 21, you're an adult, but I didn't know, you know, sometimes you talk to your parents about that stuff. That's why I was curious if they had any feedback about that. So,
and I think it's a little different because, and what I mean is, you know, you got your mom and dad, right? They're mm-hmm. not really involved in the shooting aspect. You know, they see the news, they see this, you know, some good, some bad, mm-hmm. et cetera. Right. And then when you really start getting into the shooting industry, you know, because I've been in this industry for almost 24, 25 years, mm-hmm. whatever it is now, you kind of see, you know, how involved you could be with these items.
Yes.
And how responsible you need to be, and how, you know, they can be dangerous, but they can also be very fun and pleasurable. And then you start respecting them differently. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when you start doing more interacting with them, you have a different respect for these items.
Okay.
So when I start going into, like I said, IDPA or the self-defense, I start seeing that. So, you know, most people know that I'm not a big drinker.
Okay.
So before I was 21, I drank like a fish.
Okay.
I mean, it was just all the time. Mm-hmm. It was just like party, you know, let's just, you know, enjoy life. And then when I started getting the firearms, I was like, well, I can't do this. You know, I don't want to hurt myself. I don't hurt somebody else. Mm-hmm. So if anything, that really got me away from alcohol.
Okay.
So it was a good thing there too.
Well, that is a good thing. It takes a lot of self-responsibility to realize that as well. So at 21 years old, you had some common sense to really be able to put that in your head. A lot of kids now don't have that, you know, same mentality. They think they can go shoot and after they get through and they can go crazy, but they don't know how to control that sometimes. So you had that control factor there early on. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. They say, I want to be, you know, responsible adult, mm-hmm. young man. Didn't want to hurt nobody. Didn't want to hurt myself.
Right.
And as you know, common sense, right? Alcohol and guns don't mix.
Right.
I mean, come on.
So when you went to IDPA first time, did you see that as a competition, or did you see it more as a way to just hone in on your skills?
Try to hone into the skills.
Okay.
And also, you know, you got excited about it because, you know, you get to see the results. You can see how great you did, how sucky you did.
Did it make you nervous about the word competition when you realized what was going on?
No, but I think what made me nervous was how bad I sucked at it.
Okay.
How I couldn't. I mean, let's put it this way. So I get my Sigma. I do all my stuff. I'm trying to do the competition, right?
Right.
And I'm like, okay, let's zero the gun. This is how bad it was. I mean, I'm standing. I mean, the thing was, I don't know, maybe like 7 feet, 10 feet in front of me.
Right.
I can't even hit the damn target. I mean, I'm like pulling the trigger, right? And there's like no holes on the target. I mean, seriously, this is bad, right?
Right.
And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And I was like, you know, the gun's bad or something's bad. So Ben Arie, they have these little wooden boxes with carpets on it, or not boxes, but wooden, just pieces of wood with carpet on it.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, well, like sandbag it, right? But I use this piece of wood. Mm-hmm. Still couldn't hit the thing.
Wow.
Just sucked at it, man.
Was there somebody trying to help you? Were you
I was a lost cause, man. I was just a lost cause.
There's not a ranger coming up from the state of Arizona going, hey, you're low and a lot left.
Yeah, I mean, how can I do this, right? I mean, I'm like literally sandbagging this thing.
Right.
It is what it is.
Right.
So obviously, you know, I'm trying to get better at this thing. So I was pursuing it. Mm-hmm. I did IDPA for, I don't know, several years, five, four. I can't remember.
Did you like the competition side of it, though?
I did. I really liked it.
Did you play it like sports or anything in high school?
I wrestled.
Did you?
So I wrestled in high school.
Okay.
And also I went to college as well. And I wrestled for the first year.
Right.
And then I realized that, you know, I just didn't want to have that commitment no more. You know, because when I was in college, literally, you know, I rode my bike to school, maybe like 5 or 6 miles, mm-hmm. did my homework or did my classes, did all my homework that day after all my classes, because I always did morning, and then rode my bike back, had lunch, rode my bike back, and then we had practice for 3 or 4 hours.
You're in high school?
College.
Oh, college. Wow.
And then rode my bike back again. And I was like, this is just too much.
It was. Wow. Did the game change a lot in college too, of course, from high school?
The talent. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're thinking you're awesome, right? You know, mm-hmm. you had a great senior year, and then you go to college and you realize, well, these guys are way better. And then, you know, I just lost the drive.
I got it.
So after during the first year I got out.
So when you got into IDPA for that, you know, second year going to it where you finally got a gun that was sight-inable, we'll call it.
Yeah, I still have the gun, actually.
Do you really?
Yeah, so after I got rid of the Sigma, I don't know what I bought afterwards, but I eventually bought myself a Kimber.
Okay.
I don't know what model number it was, mm-hmm. but it's a 45 ACP, mm-hmm. Fixed sights. I remember because I put Heinies on it. And has some work done to it. And I shot that for years and years and years.
Wow. Did you have siblings?
Yes, I do. I have a sister that's a year younger than I am. And I have a brother, which I have no idea how young he is. He's like 22, 23 years old.
Right. Did they ever care about you shooting when you started shooting? Were they interested in that? Did you ever talk to them about that or anything?
Well, I took my brother out shooting before.
Right.
I took him a few times out. I actually took him to a USPSA match when he was maybe 10, maybe a little older. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And he actually shot one time.
Right.
He had a good time. My sister, she'll ask me a lot of questions. She'll be like, okay, well, you know, obviously her husband goes out to shooting or they'll do this or do that. And she'll tell me the story. And I'll be like, yeah, that was unsafe. I mean, you shouldn't be in the front seat of the car while they're playing with guns in the trunk.
Yeah, that could be an issue.
But let's be honest, right? I mean, most people out there that with firearms, they just don't think about that, right?
Right.
You know, like, for example, I'm safe, right?
Yes.
And you're telling people this. That's great. And you can say it all you want, but you know, I was always told that, you know, either you're going to have an AD or you already had an AD. Mm-hmm. So we have to follow the safety rules to prevent that. Because if you fail safety rule number one, number two is there to protect you, then number three, and then number four. Mm-hmm. Then after that, you're just going to hurt yourself or somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, my first AD was doing an RO class.
Okay.
The first time I ever shot on USPSA stage was in an RO class.
Okay.
And had my finger in the trigger guard while I was going to reload and popped one. So yeah, it happens.
And did you pass your RO class?
You know, the funny, it's a good story. And the answer to the question is yes.
Okay.
However, you know, you're told when you go to class, you know, if you do anything deliberately trying to get somebody to do something to expose a rule or something, and it's something you do on purpose, you can be, you know, dismissed from the class and gone.
Oh, okay.
And that's talked about. And everybody was given cards to do small infractions, like a procedural or something like that, with a foot being different outside of fault line, different things for people to look for during this RO class. And Troy and Jody and another person was there who was conducting the class. It was done in Alabama. And it happened to me. And you know, there's a lot of things happening in the video. And if you take an RO class, I think it's still the video was, actually use an RO class. You can actually see me shoot my first USPSA stage and do this. But when it happened to me, you know, it scared me.
Of course,
I never, you know, I mean, I had my 1911 with a rig I'd put together just like two nights before, just stuff. I didn't have all the stuff I have now by any means. And I just put it together because I wanted to take this. I wanted to learn more about the rules because I was a big rule guy because I used to officiate football, you know, for 12 years.
Okay.
And when it happened, you know, I said, I thought I was done. And Jody says, go talk to Troy. I was like, oh, shit. Let me go talk to Troy. Here we go. And Troy goes, did you do that on purpose? I said, hell no. It scared the shit out of me. And Troy goes, all right, we got another stage to shoot. Keep your damn finger out of the trigger guard. Yes, sir. And I was like, damn, I got to shoot again. But no, so it happens. And I'm glad it happened that way. And a valuable lesson learned. And, you know, it didn't go over the berm. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's going to happen if you're not aware of the safety rules. And I never shot an USP. I never shot anything before like that. I'd shot cowboy. We talked about that earlier, but never anything like this at all. So get back to you real quick. IDPA, how did you know what sport was next? Did you just, were you getting better and they ran you off to go to USPSA or what was that like? Cause I hear stories like that too.
Well, actually I had a neighbor.
Okay.
That was getting into shooting. So we shot what we call Tuesday Night Steel, which I'm pretty sure you're familiar with. It's that Rio Salado.
Okay.
Just still match.
Yes.
Box to box. Mm-hmm. It happens every Tuesday night.
Yep.
So him and I will go and shoot this match all the time because we were close to Rio. And next you know, he signed me up for a USPSA membership. That was it.
And he then, signed you up for a membership.
Yeah. He's like, hey, I got you a membership for USPSA.
Okay.
We're going to shoot this match. And I was like, okay. And we just went and shot, and you know, I wasn't really into USPSA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't dislike it. I was just kind of more into IDPA at the time,
right?
And then it changed at that time because IDPA was really, you know, restricted.
Okay,
you know, it wasn't like what it is now. You know, there's fault lines now. There's mm-hmm. this or that, and you gotta forgive me. I don't know all the rules because it's been so long right. since IDPA,
of course.
But when we had it, it was always dependent on the RO. It was like, you know, screen cover at you or whatever the case may be. So mm-hmm. you get a procedural, et cetera.
Right.
USPSA, what I found really interesting was they could control your start position and they can control your shooting area. Everything else is up to you.
Right.
And I really like that.
You get to solve the puzzle yourself.
Yeah. You get, again, this is supposed to be about fun, right?
What year was that, your first USPSA match? You remember?
I have no idea.
Okay. 5, 10 years ago or 20 years ago?
Oh, no. I mean, it was probably so in my early 20s.
Okay. So you're still in early. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So okay. I like said, IDPA was only maybe 3 to 5 years, okay. right?
Right.
And then after that, it was USPSA.
When you went there in USPSA, what kind of category were you shooting in when you first got there?
If I remember correctly, it was be still the single stack.
The single stack. Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
I would still be shooting the single stack.
Okay.
And then eventually I got a para.
Okay.
I think it was a para P18. So it was a 9mm.
Mm-hmm.
And I still got that gun still. And I started shooting that in limited 10 minor. I don't know why, but I started shooting the limited 10 minor. And it mm-hmm. was really fun. And then eventually I finally got an open gun. And then I never went, you know, I still shoot limited every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been open after that.
So going from single stack to limited 10 minor. And then jumping into open gun, what made you say, I want to try open?
You know, if you think about it, you know, at that time, in my opinion, open was the division.
Okay.
I mean, that's the division that was winning matches. You got to remember, it's a race gun, like a race car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see really a limited guy winning the match because of the competition and the gear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted. I wanted to compete and see where I was at against all these great shooters.
Right.
You know, when I was coming up, right, you know, I'm looking at all these guys like, you know, Max Michelle, Travis Tomasi,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jerry Barnhart, and you got Todd Jarrett, right. you know, great shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And what were they doing? You know, they're shooting open.
Okay.
So that's what you wanted to do.
You wanted to compare yourself to the best.
I mean, you know, at that time, yeah, right. you had the competition bug. And how do you judge yourself, right?
Yep. The Arizona I have found out, you know, we know the Southeast is a mecca for Steel Challenge and a lot of shooting that goes on. But here in Arizona, it's a mecca for every kind of shooting out there. It's crazy what I found out, all the shooting sports that happen in Arizona. Huge. Was it, you had matches to go to all the time down here, based on here, basically. I mean, there's nothing you could not do within a 2 hour drive of this area.
Less than that.
Yes.
I mean, think about it, maybe an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to go to Rio, I mean, you're driving fast.
Right. We all do. Which
it'll take you an hour to get to, right?
Right.
You want to go to Cowtown, it's, you know, from where we're at right now, 13 right. minutes. You want to go to Ben Avery, 13 minutes.
Yeah.
South Mountain, 45 minutes. If you want to go to Tucson, you know, then you know, maybe like an hour and a half.
I met the lady that runs Cowtown, has the gun rights there for that,
that
range. And she actually, they had the very first SAS match ever at that range back in 1984.
Okay.
So that was kind of cool. She's been doing this for 40 years. And I met her the other day. It was pretty cool to hear that when you brought up Cowtown. I thought I'd let you know that. It was crazy to me, all the stuff she was telling me. But when you go back to USPSA and you're shooting open, where I was going with that was so much happening in Arizona. When was the first time you decided to travel to out of state to an area match? Well, area match is probably here or California. But when was your first time you started traveling shooting?
I remember, you know, I know my friend told me this, and I'm not too sure. Is this a little?
No, you're fine. You're
okay, good. I don't know if it was in Brian Eno's book. I'm pretty sure it was. So I imagine somebody would correct me. But obviously, and I'm not trying to say cocky, but in Arizona, I was doing pretty well.
Okay.
You know, I believe I was doing really well. And, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that there was a saying is, you know, sometimes you're in for one pond and you want to be better, you got to get into another pond.
Correct.
So you have to shoot area matches. You have to shoot nationals. You have mm-hmm. to shoot level twos. And the reason mm-hmm. why is you're going to see a different level of shooting. You're also going to see a different level of match designs. So if you're just in one area at all given times, you may be good in that area mm-hmm. because that's always the competition. That's always a style of match.
Mm-hmm.
But not every match is going to be run and gun. Not every match is going to be short courses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you're going to be heavy props, less props, et cetera. So that's the reason why I started traveling.
Okay.
Was to see the different competition, but also hopefully get better.
Mm-hmm. When was your first national event you went to?
Well, tell you the truth, I can't. Well, it was actually in Montana.
Okay.
Was it Montana? Missoula. Where were Missoula's at?
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's Montana, but I could be wrong. But that was my first nationals event. So who knows what year that was. Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago. That was over 15 years ago.
Okay.
And then I did not miss the nationals until 2022.
Wow.
So I was just busy and life and so on. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, forget it. I'll just stay home.
Okay. Do you remember how you finished in your first nationals when you started comparing yourself?
I think I was either top 20 or 22, something like that.
Wow. And back then it was a big deal to be top 16.
Yes.
Do you remember when you first made top 16? How many years it took you to get there?
Who knows? But I think it was a couple of years.
Okay.
So maybe 4 or 5, something like that.
Okay. Did you ever qualify or try to qualify for World Shoot?
I never qualified for the team.
Okay.
But when I started was in 2014 to do the World Shoot when it was in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a slot for 2014, 2017, and also for Thailand as well.
Right.
So ever since I tried, I was able to get a slot.
That's cool. That's cool. And the reason I'm asking all these questions is because you went through this progression of getting better and doing everything with an open gun where you say you never went back. When did you start and realize I want to do something with guns, to work on guns and to modify guns and to make guns better? When did that hit for you?
So when I started manufacturing guns mm-hmm. or getting into the business, so I think that was – 14, 15 years ago
okay.
when I started. So before that, I worked at Scottsdale Gun Club.
Okay.
So they hired me as a firearms instructor. So I did that for a while. And then, of course, became the range master and instructed. And then I moved into, I believe it was a sales manager. So, I forget, something like, I was in charge of the retail store. Okay.
Okay.
So I did that for a while.
So when you jumped into guns, you just went all in with your career and everything, working with guns and everything then.
Well, it was supposed to be a part-time gig.
Okay.
It was just supposed to be like, you know, a couple times a night, weekends, mm-hmm. stuff like that. It was never supposed to be a full-time job.
Right.
But the job I had, I hated it. And I just didn't want to do it no more. So I got this opportunity. I was like, oh, that'd be cool. I get to shoot guns all day, get to hang out with gun people. Mm-hmm. You know, what could be wrong?
A lot.
It was a good experience.
No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, you know, they obviously, you know, they're able to teach you a lot of skills, right? I mean, a lot yes. of people's skills, how to interact with customers, stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. So I did that, I believe 5 years, and then I had an opportunity to partner with a company called Cameron's Customs.
Okay.
And which is still open today.
Where are they out of?
They're actually not, they're like 15 minutes from my house. So it's okay. like, it's like Lindale.
Okay.
So it's not that far away.
Right.
Now I've known Ed, you know, at this given time, I've probably known Ed, the owner, about 25 years.
Okay.
So what happened was there was a total of four of us. Okay. So one individual had this idea to bring me and another individual to Cameron's Customs.
Okay.
And to be able to learn to trade and keep the trade alive, okay? So I was cool with it. I was tired of Scott's Gun Club. My other friend that came with us as well, he was tired of it as well. So we came in. I was 25% owner. Ed was 26. The other one was 24, okay? Mm-hmm. So we had one partner that was pretty much like a silent partner. And us three wanted to build the company and learned the craftsmanship as well. So I did that for about, I think, 4.5 years.
Okay.
So our deal was 5 years, reevaluate, either continue or kind of have the owner, Ed Cameron, kind of like retire and we could continue with the company or we just all go our separate ways.
Besides Ed, who you knew, mm-hmm. I take it, the other two people, were they good friends of yours or somebody you didn't
know? Oh, yeah. I knew these guys for years.
Okay, good.
So it wasn't like completely strangers.
Well, when you're out shooting with somebody and you're having a good time with somebody, that's one thing. But when you put four people in a room and you have to work together, you might learn some good things you like about the people, but there also may be some traits that you didn't or weren't aware of.
You're 100% right.
Okay. You know?
I mean,
did you have some objections you had to overcome?
We do in business. You always have that, right? I mean, yeah, four guys and pretty much we're all equal almost. Yeah. Right. So I will have an idea. He will have an idea, et cetera. Right. And then you have to try to figure out, well, we don't all agree. So which direction we're going to go? It wasn't bad, you know, but there have been times where, you know, we're trying to figure stuff out.
Okay.
And we were just working all the time, man. I mean, seriously, I was.
What were you building?
1911. So 1911/2011. So okay. Limited guns, single stack guns, open guns, no revolver stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning the trade. I'm literally shooting all the darn time, you know, going to every match I can to promote the company like you, right? Hunter's Gold, right?
That's right.
I mean, yes, you love it, but at the same time, you're literally traveling to get the name out.
That's right.
So we're doing the same thing. So it's just nonstop, right? and like I said, it was supposed to be.
Was the other people traveling besides Ed with you, or were you that guy?
There was another guy that traveled with us as well.
Okay.
And but it was always me and him. But Ed never did, and the other guy never did as well. I mean, mm-hmm. Ed came like maybe like once or twice or something like that. Mm-hmm. But he was just mostly at the shop. So he says we were just working all the time, building guns, and it was supposed to be 5 years to reevaluate to see what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And I think it was 4.5. I came in and I said, hey, man, I'll give you guys like October and I'm out. No, you know, no mad, no nothing. I was just like, I just don't want to do this no more. I don't want to work like this no more.
Is this out like you want to get your investment out as well, or is out or just I want to just not be here anymore?
Pretty much, let's just dissolve this thing.
Okay, just make it go away. Okay.
Let's just dissolve this thing and just have a great day.
So you had burnout.
Yeah, I mean, it was successful. You know, we did a good job. You know, everyone was happy with us. We got the name out. Mm-hmm. It was just, I just didn't want to.
When you walk into the doors to meet with three other people and say, hey, I want out. What? There had to be something that led up to that, to make that happen.
It was just, again, working too much. It was just
too much work.
It was just, you know, like I said, you're shooting all the time, which is great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's admit it. You know, you are practicing all the time. You mm-hmm. have expenses, you have bullets, you have powder, you have all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know it sounds like I'm complaining, but I'm not. It takes a lot away from family time.
Okay.
You know, I have a young daughter at the time, a wife, mm-hmm. house, dog, et cetera. So you owning Hunter's Goad, you know that it's not an 8-to-5 job.
No, it's not.
You're working all the time. Mm-hmm. Your phone's going off. Your email is going off. You're trying to help everybody as best you can. You're working through weekends. You're working late nights. It's just like, yeah, I'm done. There's other more important things like family.
Okay.
So I decided myself, I would like to work less and be able to spend more time with the family.
Right.
So that's pretty much my.
So what was your plan to go make money at that point?
To tell you the truth, I had no plan. I was like, I'm out.
Your mind said, I'm in quit mode. I'm going to do something. But, you know, did you. You couldn't quit, I guess. You had to go find something to do. What did you do?
I mean, well, so pretty much, you know, I came in and.
How long did it take to dissolve it once you drop that bomb?
Well, the other partner was in it as well. He's like, let's do it now.
We've got 50% of the vote.
Yeah, we have 50% of the vote. It was done, right? So we probably worked maybe like another month, two mm-hmm. months, because, you know, we want to make sure that anybody that ordered a gun was going to get their gun.
Right.
Okay. So we did everything that we needed to do and then dissolved the
gun. But you're mentally checked out. And because let me tell you what I mean by that. When you go to a job, and I've worked a lot of jobs growing up in retail world. As soon as you turn that 2-week notice in,
you're out.
You have checked out.
Oh, I was done. Out, man.
Okay, because I've had employees in the past, other jobs I've worked at, say, hey, I'm going to turn in a 2-week notice, and I'll say, all right, go ahead and turn your keys in today. You're gone. They're like, what?
Most companies do that.
I said 2 weeks. I said, no, I'm going to pay you for 2 weeks because you're doing this, but you're gone because your mind's not going to be here and you're going to screw things up. And I don't need that extra drama on my plate. So enjoy your 2-week vacation paid because you're out of here.
Exactly. So, a lot of companies do that.
Nothing personal. This is business. So when you checked out for a month, but you still had to build customers' guns based on your own integrity.
100%
and everything. I mean, you had to get done. That's wonderful.
Yeah, you can't do that to people, right? Mm-hmm. I always tell people, I always try to treat people the way I want to be treated. So, like, I had a call today from a customer.
Okay.
And he was telling me, you know, you're so personable. I'm always able to call you. I'm always able to text you, email you, and you always get back. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I drop it right then, but I always get back. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I just simply told him, I try to treat everyone the way I would like to be treated myself. Mm-hmm. Because if I called you, Brian, tomorrow, and I'm talking to you about Hunter's Goad, mm-hmm. and you give me like 30 seconds, and then you want me off the phone, I'm not going to spend any money with you.
That's right. You can feel that.
Yeah. It's just mm-hmm. why?
Yep.
But if you're like, hey, is there any other questions you got? No. Great. If you have any other questions, free, call me.
Right.
You know, my name's Eddie Garcia. Have a great day. Bye.
Right.
So that's pretty much how I try to treat people.
Cool. So you left the company and you're at home.
Mm-hmm. Doing nothing.
Doing nothing.
It was wonderful.
Playing.
By the way.
Playing family time, as you put it.
It was wonderful, by the way.
Nice break.
My wife at the time hated it, right?
Okay.
She wanted me to work. And I was like, why? Right. You're doing great, right? So, yeah, I just kind of hung out and kind of been a dad. And, you know, she was in soccer at the time, which I love soccer.
Okay.
I mean, I love the soccer atmosphere, meaning that I'll have a cooler. I have sun, you know, what are the fruit drink they want, right?
Yeah. Capri Sun.
Fruits. Yeah. And kind of cater to all the kids.
So you were a soccer dad.
It was great. Yeah. But she hated soccer. So it lasted one time, one season.
Right.
Now we're in volleyball.
Volleyball.
I absolutely. And then no offense to volleyball guys.
Okay? No, volleyball sucks.
Sitting there.
Yeah.
All day long. Yeah. So this is my life right now. Okay. Forgive me, but my neck hurts. But
that's all good.
So check this out. So obviously now I'm divorced, right? So the world knows this. Right. And I have 50-50 of my kid.
Yeah.
So she has volleyball Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
All right.
So when I have her on Wednesdays and Thursdays every other week, I have to drive almost like a 60-mile round trip to go to this volleyball camp, which there's one right down the street here, right?
Yeah.
Why can't we just go to that one?
Yeah.
But we can't. We have to go all the way down to this one.
It's a special one.
It costs us double the amount.
Yeah, it's a special one.
And I guarantee you, every weekend she has some kind of volleyball tournament.
Right. Like traveling volleyball, or is it all here at one this location?
Oh, no. Oh, no. We could be like in Tucson. You can see how excited I am. Yeah. We could be in Tucson, and we could be in Yuma.
All right.
And it's not like it's a situation where they're like, 2 weeks, here's our schedule.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's Friday night. We're supposed to be playing in Chandler, but now we're going to play in Tucson. I have to drive 2-3 hours to go to Tucson and play. And watch you guys, no offense, Haley, but lose.
That's awesome. Yeah, volleyball's.
I sit there.
Yeah.
And of course, there's volleyball moms, volleyball dads, et cetera.
Do you join in their fun?
I fall asleep. I bought myself this big comfy chair, right?
Right.
It's all fluffy. I mean, it's definitely a girl's chair.
Yeah.
But it's so darn comfortable.
What color is it?
White.
Okay.
White. Well, I mean, seriously, it looks like a fur coat thing, right? It's fluffy as heck, right? I put my headset on.
Right.
And I download movies.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to, but I fall asleep.
Right.
And the mom's
What movie do you download to fall asleep to?
It could be, but again, you know, you're watching this. I mean,
no, it's not my point. I'm just curious what new movies you would.
Well, I'm trying to watch like John Wick. Okay. I'm trying to watch something that I actually enjoy, right? Because I do like John Wick.
Right, of course.
But then you look up and you're watching the bing, bing, bing. And then the ball will come over the net and the girl just like watch it fall down. Like, what the heck, dude? The whole goal is to knock the ball over the net, right?
Right.
Not to watch it fall on the ground. Mm-hmm. And then
they train dogs how to do this. It's not hard.
So I usually fall asleep. The moms usually throw water on me, wake me up. Well,
really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They find it funny, right? I mean, it's all good humor, right?
I guess.
So the last game, again, if they're watching this broadcast, I highly doubt they will. But if they ever did, they'd probably hate me. But the last time I did statistics, right? Seriously. I was so.
To try to keep yourself engaged?
Well, I wanted to see, I really wanted to see like how many, you know, let's say player three, right? Which is my daughter. Mm-hmm. How many times she hit the ball and scored, or how many times she hit the ball and caused them a point.
Okay.
So I wanted to see like, you know, who's strong, who's weak. So the girl that's weak, right? The one that cost the most points, right? That scored no points.
Right.
Got MVP for the game that they lost, right? I was like, I'm looking at the statistics. I'm like, she cost us like 5 points. She made no points.
Yeah.
And she's wearing the VIP.
Did you necklace. Make this public?
I told my daughter.
Oh, I told your daughter only. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're teaching your daughter politics. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, she knows how I feel about it, you know. Yeah. She knows I love her. She knows I'm doing the best I can, right. You know. Because, you know, let's be honest, right? You know, I'm not married,
right?
You know, I'm running a business,
right?
Shooting,
yeah,
and then I'm trying to do all her activities that she wants as well,
right?
It's a lot, man.
I get it more than you know. So let's back up. You're home relaxing earlier.
Oh, yeah. My vacation. Yeah.
Yeah. Your vacation time. What made you want to start your own company?
So, you know, I was.
Or how long was your vacation first?
Well, I was hoping it was going to be forever, but that didn't work out.
Right.
So obviously I had to do something, right? You know, what am I going to do? Am I going to start instructing again? Am I, what am I going to do? Well, be honest with you, I do love the farms industry.
Okay.
You know, and like we're talking tonight, I met so many people that I would never have met without this industry.
Correct.
And a lot of them are very close friends of mine now. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them I call family.
Right.
Some of them has a key to my house.
Right.
They could come and go as where they want. They don't even live in Arizona. Why right. do they need a key? Right. But I'm like, just keep it when you come back. Mm-hmm. So I decided, well, you know, I sat there and I was like, well, I think I'm pretty good at building guns. And why not? Seriously, why not? Mm-hmm. So I told my wife, and she didn't really care. She just wanted me to work, right?
She didn't care. Did she want you to go somewhere to work, like get out of the house? Or was this going to be something that you did at the house?
Well, my whole plan was to be at the house.
Okay.
She didn't really stress that, you know, leave the house or not. I think she was just more stressed about me working. And I'll tell you, I mean, she was making great money, right?
Right.
I mean, I was like, why, you know, I supported you for, you know, how long?
Right.
You know, let's flip the coin.
Don't always work that way.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't always work out.
Let me write this for 16 years, right? It didn't work out.
Yeah.
But so I decided to do it. So I called Ed Cameron because, again, I know him for so long.
Okay.
And I told him what I was going to do.
How'd that go?
He was totally cool with it.
Sweet. Because a lot of gun people are very protective of stuff like that. That's why I asked that question, how that went.
It's so. Yeah, man, it's just really weird. I mean, like you talk to people, I'm not saying all builders this way, but you talk to some builders, like, you know, how do you do this or that, and it's like, can't tell you,
right?
And other ones, there's, I mean, you can't get them to shut up, right? I
right.
mean, they're willing to tell you everything, and right. I mean that in a good way.
Yes.
So I tell Ed, and he was really cool about everything. The only thing he told me is, like, you know, it's a really hard business. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, I've been in it for like 4.5 years. So I kind of figured that out. Mm-hmm. So I went, and you have to do a use permit because I decided to do it at my house.
Okay.
Got a use permit, filed with ATF. I'm in the county, so I don't need a business license. I just need an LLC. So I did all my tax paperwork. Mm-hmm. And I think I was approved less than 30 days.
Wow.
And then I was like, well,
it didn't take you long to think of a name for the company.
Well, my accountant did it for me.
Really?
So, yeah. So my accountant I had since I was 18, I told him about it. So he did all the paperwork for me. So mm-hmm. it was really simple. So I did not want EMG Customs mm-hmm. because I think that's like an ego thing. Okay. I don't like that word. I think that, you know, just, I would just want to just call it EMG. Mm-hmm. But some guy in Texas owns EMG LLC mm-hmm. that makes cabinets.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I've been down this road with Hunter's Gold. Huntersgold.com takes you to a deer supplement that's not even in business anymore. So I had to add the words H and D in the middle of it for Hunter's HD Gold for high definition. And that's how I got my website and everything set up as well.
Exactly, right? So
did you attempt to call this guy that was doing cabinets to try to get it? You didn't try? Okay.
I mean, like, I was, you know, what am I going to do, you know? Harass some guy that's trying
You just want to ask, hey, you want to, you know, sell your website or sell the, you know, rights to it or anything. So I didn't know.
Nah. So I was just like, forget it.
Okay.
So
Customs it was.
Customs, yeah. We looked it up. He goes, no. He says, so next thing I know, he's like, okay, I already filed it. CMG Customs. So I was like, something I never wanted. And I was like, okay. Oh, well, you already filed it. Let's move on. And then I was like, well, this is real now. I'm going to have to go out and buy some equipment.
Yeah.
And so I did, you know, got a lathe, got a mill, bee blaster, got everything wired, mm-hmm. Inspection tables, you know, indicators. And of course, over the years, you know, it's grown and grown.
Of course.
And grown.
Of course.
You reinvest. Investing yep. it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you got the everything together to build your first gun. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about how long it takes to build guns now, hour-wise, and how many hours it usually takes. How many hours did it take to get that first gun like you wanted it?
Well, at that time, when mm-hmm. I was doing them, you know, obviously, you know, the parts were a little different. You got plastic grips, et cetera. Mm-hmm. it didn't take long.
Okay.
I mean, I could do a gun like in a week. Okay. It wasn't that bad at all.
Okay.
The reason why it gets longer is because, you know, people point out things, right? Like Jeremy Reed, right? Jeremy does great work, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Known him for who knows how long. 1911 guy. He makes limited guns. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever built an open gun. I could be wrong. But, you know, this is maybe like a year or two ago. I don't know if I was on the phone or he's texting me, but he says, hey, can I tell you something about your gun? Jeremy, tell me anything you want, man. He goes, everything's beautiful except for that ejector. And that was because I wasn't using oversized ejectors.
Okay.
You could just buy a regular ejector and it has a big gap everywhere. Okay. So everything's like seamless except for this one little spot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, I can see what you're saying. He says, well, you know, I just buy these ejectors because they work and never thought about it. Thank you. Well, then I was like, son of a gun, right? So now I'm going to have to get an oversized ejector and cut the whole thing. So just doing that alone, you know, sometimes it's an hour to do it. Sometimes it's an hour and a half.
Right.
But now that just increased the time of the build. So back then it was pretty fast to build a gun. Mm-hmm. You know, because at that time...
And you started off with just regular 1911s or open guns?
I did open guns and limited guns.
Okay.
I didn't really do too many single stacks.
Okay.
At that time. Single stacks, in my opinion, should be exactly flawless. They should be... Everything should match up. There should be no line issues, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And they do take a lot of time. And I just didn't want to go down that road.
Okay.
So when I was doing the guns... Throughout the process, like I said, they were still good working guns. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. But then I started breaking things down where, like, you know, I didn't like how the barrel fit was, for example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I talked to a lot of builders, worked with Ed Cameron on it. There's another guy named Pete Single. He helped me as well. And then to learn how to improve the barrel fits. While doing that alone, that increased the production of the gun as well.
Right.
And then I did other things like timing of the gun or this or that. So pretty much from then to now, the time has definitely increased.
Wow.
Just because I was so critical on trying to produce something as best as I could do. Mm-hmm. Not saying the best gun, the best that I could do at that time for the customer. So I'm always trying to improve. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I don't think I've ever told anybody I was the best. I was just trying to do the best I can to give you the best product that I could do at that time.
Wow. You've made guns for a lot of world, national and world champions throughout the time you've been doing guns. Does that give you a certain kind of pride when that happens or something kind of, is it just you treat, I know you treat everybody the same, but is it one of those moments where, you know, you think that you've made it when that happens?
You know, to tell you the truth, I don't think I even made it yet.
Okay.
Because let's put it this way. You know, a lot of people, like, I had a guy sometime last week, he was asking me, like, you know, who do you admire? Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, you know, there's a lot of good 2011 builders out there.
There okay? is.
But when I'm looking at builders, I'm looking at 1911 builders, to be honest with you. I look at Jeremy Reed. I look at Jason Bunker, Jason Burden, Ted Yost, also Chuck Rogers, Ed Cameron, and also Pete Single. And I'm pretty sure I probably missed somebody. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at those guys because, you know, they're doing their own checkering. They're doing this. They're doing that. It just, the guns look flawless. The 2011 world, again, that has definitely changed since the time I started, since 2000 or 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. The reason I say that is because back then the guns were not cosmetically correct. They did a good job with the parts they were doing with at the time, or even maybe 15 years ago. But like the back of the slide wasn't like an arch. Okay. Mm-hmm. You could see it go round and then dip in and then come back out. Or you look at the grip safety with the tang of the frame, it doesn't blend in really well.
Right.
Or when they're beveling it, it'll be like a real thick line and a narrow line and a thick line. That's great. You're breaking the edge, but, you know, try, right? So now I think there's a lot of builders that are doing a really good job.
Yeah. You sent me some videos and pictures before when we've talked behind, you know, outside of the market. Sometimes we're having conversations. I ask what you're working on and you'll send me some stuff that you're blending.
Yeah.
And blending with sandpaper by hand. You're not using any machines that I see. And it's always, you're working by hand. Is there, you know, is that because doing everything by hand, you just feel you have more control, or is the machine too easy to mess something up? What's the reason why you just want to do everything by hand?
Well, when I'm like breaking the edges, for example, or beveling the outside of the gun, you know, I'm sure you could probably do it on the machine. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when I'm doing everything, again, there's nothing wrong with people working on CNCs. Okay? Right. There's really not. I mean, I know Brian Bunker, he does a lot of stuff on the CNC and he does excellent work.
Right.
No ifs, no buts. But the way I was taught, did I hit something?
No, we're good.
But the way I was taught was with your hands, you know, with the file, you're able to do this.
Right.
Because I could tell you, when I first started beveling a gun, I sucked.
Right.
Bad. I mean, I was doing the back of the slide. It just was not consistent at all. What you do is you go over to the Scotch-Brite wheel and you make another round surface and you do it again. You're doing these with junk slides. You're just doing over and over and over and over again. So now it's almost like a pride thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, someone's buying a gun and these ain't cheap, by the way.
Right.
So when I'm blending the gun in or I'm beveling the gun in, I'm able to tell the customer, I did this. You put your loops on, you look at it, you tell me how consistent it is. And now, you know, they can't tell the difference.
Wow.
And it just, to me, I think it's a lost art, Brian. You know, there's just quite a few people that still do it, right? I know Reed does it and Jason Burden, all these, the guys that I mentioned.
Right.
I know they all do it. Okay. And other people's work that you look at, again, no offense to them, maybe they're just acceptable to them. It's just not there.
Right.
So to me, again, it's just, it was the way I was taught. It's an old way to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I take a lot of pride in it.
That's awesome. No, I can tell you definitely do that based on conversations we had. Let's change gears a little bit before we get off here. I got some questions for you because you've heard people talk about, you know, major power factor.
Yeah.
And then, you know, do we need it? Do we need to lower major power factor and stuff like that based on putting too much heat on the guns and too much abuse on the guns? What's your feeling about that?
Well, you know, the power factor was way higher back in the day. It was 170 something, 170 or 175. I forget what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And look, international standard is still in the 170s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, forgive me, I don't know what it is.
It's 165, open. I think, maybe.
Well, for open, it's 160.
Yeah, that's right.
So for standard, I believe it's 170 or 175.
Okay, got it.
I forget which one it is, but I don't shoot standard. So, we've already lowered it. There's really nothing wrong with major power factor, as long as you're not shooting a silly load.
Right.
You know, you're following the load data, right?
So what about 9 major? You think that's a silly load? Or do you think everything should be?
Well, I know a lot of people are going to hate this.
Well, that's why I asked you the question.
I know there's builders out there that love 9mm major. But if you ask me, it is an overpressure round.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. You know, you should probably shoot a 146 bullet or bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And your powder selection is very less choosable to get those powders or to get the pressure down. And unfortunately, in the game for open, no one's going to shoot a 146 bullet. You know, the gun's not flat, right? It kind of like jumps in the hand, feels weird. So you want to shoot a 121, 124, 125, etc. to build the gas, right? Well, now you're going to build the pressure up.
Right.
Well, how do you reduce the pressure? Well, now they're trying to increase the overall length of the 9mm, which is fine. We lead ream the barrels at that time, right? Mm-hmm. No big deal. Lead ream it to the cartridge you want and move on.
Right.
But you still can't get the pressures down.
Right.
So at the end of the day, is it really the 9mm major's fault?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just, you know, they made it legal? Is it that their fault? I don't know.
Right.
I remember when 9mm was accepted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was right before I got an open gun. In fact, my first open gun was a 9mm.
Mm-hmm.
I never liked it. I mean, 38 Super Comp, I don't care what they say, is always going to shoot softer and flatter than 9 major because mm-hmm. of the pressure of the round.
Right.
So at the end of the day, I'm not a big fan.
I got it.
Yeah.
Do you, you know, some companies have gotten out of even making open guns mm-hmm. because their warranty department was, you know, flooded with stuff that wasn't profitable.
In I can some see ways. That.
Do you see a lot of guns come back that are 9 major that, you know, that you have done for the people before, or is it still just the way that you feel the gun's made to certain tolerances so you don't have problems with it?
Well, like I said, when I talk to somebody, so say they order a gun, you call me up and you say, I want a 9 major. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you all the pros and cons.
Okay.
And then at that time, we'll proceed if that's really what you really want. Mm-hmm. But I'm a big advocate of 38 Supercom.
Okay.
It's just what it is. Again, I've had experience with 9 major. And I don't consider myself, you know, really shitty or, excuse me, really.
It's okay.
I don't know if you can swear, but.
You can.
Okay. Well, a real shitty shooter. Mm-hmm. I really don't consider that. I consider myself not the greatest, but I definitely know what I'm doing. Okay. Right. I just don't see any benefit. I just don't. I've never seen this in my guns or the time when I was working with or when I was with Cameras Customs mm-hmm. with a 9 major. But I have seen people's guns before that when they shoot an overpressure round over time, 25, 30,000 rounds, inside the chamber generates a ring. So now the ring gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And now when you're shooting, the brass doesn't come out because the brass swells around the ring.
Correct.
And the extractor falls out. You need a new barrel at that time. That's an expensive
endeavor. Refitting the whole thing is a whole nother ballgame.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, back in the day when I started, you know, barreling a gun wasn't that expensive. Mm-hmm. Well, now, you know, things are pricier, you know. I mean, now you're paying, what, $350 for a comp? Mm-hmm. I don't know, $300 something for a barrel. Then you have to fit the comp on the barrel. You got to crown the barrel, fit the barrel in the slide, fit the barrel into the frame, mm-hmm. do all the cosmetics. That's a lot of money, man.
Wow. It's a lot. Now, you know, we got a provisional that's going to start May 1st, where you're going to have limited optics.
Yep.
And I'm not sure, I haven't read all the minutes yet based on when we did this recording, but, you know, minor power factor, major power factor could be an issue all over again for 2011s and a smaller gun. Thoughts?
I don't think they'll ever make that into a major gun, to okay. the truth, but that's just me personally. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with limited optics. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was more of a fan of it. Mm-hmm. Not because I want to build them. I have right. really no interest in it.
You getting orders already since everything's kind of...
I've already built one.
Have you really?
Yeah, okay. I've already built one. But it's not for an individual in the USPSA game.
Right.
He plays a different game. I have no idea what it is. They travel somewhere. You know, they have their long gun, they have their shotgun, they have their handgun.
Right.
Everything has to be on them. They walk through the woods or something and shoot something and come back. I have no idea. But he's a good buddy of mine, so I built him one.
Right.
But back to what I was saying is... I think it's a good idea for limited optics because look at what the civilian market's doing. Okay. So I always consider military, law enforcement, civilian, and then the competition market. Well, all the civilians now, they want to be able to have a gun with an optic on it to carry inside the waist, inside the car, et cetera. So that's a new phase, right? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't USPSA want that, in my opinion? It would just be good for the market. It'd be good for more members, more participation. So I do think it's a good idea for the growth of the sport.
Do you think people actually, you know, carry optics has gotten kind of out of control though?
I think
they haven't. I mean, I don't think people are really carrying around some of the carry optics guns.
No, no.
That they're, you know, calling carry optics now.
I mean, again, I don't know all the rules. Okay. I don't sit there when the minutes come out, like you said, I haven't read the minutes. I can tell you, I've never read any minutes of USPSA.
Okay.
I mean, I tried to read the rule book one time of USPSA when they used to give you the rule book. Mm-hmm. I think I made it to page 3. I just gave up. Okay. I mean, so I'm a bad member of USPSA. Okay?
Right. Do you vote?
Oh, yeah.
Of good. Course. That's course. All. Wonderful. I was wondering what, you know, what percentage of people vote now. I'm going to start asking that question this year to see if I find
it's
somebody.
It's horrible, man.
Yeah, I know. It's so bad.
You look how many members we have in USPSA, and you look how many people vote. You're like, what the heck? I was like, are these even real members, right?
Exactly. Well, it's really, really a member.
So, yeah. So usually when I get like talking about the drama of USPSA or mm-hmm. stuff like that, I usually tell people I really don't have too much of an opinion because I really don't participate in keeping up what's going on right. or read the minutes. So I feel that, well, if I don't know all the facts, I really can't have an opinion.
No, and I get that. But your business is based on a lot of competition shooters. If not just competition shooters as a whole.
That's really what it is. Yeah.
So what changes based on the rules of the number one leading, you know, shooting discipline that's out there kind of changes what you're going to start getting orders for and start seeing and stuff like that. So
it may or may not. I know there's going to be quite a few people that are going to want to shoot limited optics. And mm-hmm. I guess I really want to go back to, now we go to further like carry optics, right? Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that, is that, you know, the rules of the magazine or this or that. I don't quite understand why it all went that way. Mm-hmm. I really don't quite understand why the gun could be so heavy.
Right.
And by saying that, you know, maybe some people will hear this and be upset with me. But again, I'm not going to go out there and voice it with the USPSA or social media type thing. Right. What I'm trying to say is, okay, you got carry optics. Why don't you try to keep carry optics kind of like in the civilian market as well, mm-hmm. but try to make it competitive, right? And limited optics, I hope they will kind of do the same thing, but I'm pretty sure you're going to have high capacity mags. You're going to have this. You're going to, again, I don't even know the rule book. Right. I don't even know if I can even put an island barrel in these guns. I really don't know. And until somebody really wants one, I guess that's when I will really pay attention to it.
Right.
And there's nothing, I don't hate the division. I was always a fan of the division.
Right.
So.
Well, if they moved it into carry optics based on carry optics rules, then you'd have to make so many guns a year and everything else to even be qualified in that. So it can't be brought into that based on that rule. Yeah. So they have to change a lot. But it's just, there's a lot of unknowns right now. But, you know, you're still building guns. You've got orders for, you're out for a pretty long time.
So yeah.
You're doing well as far as, you know, it's keeping you as busy as you want to be, I guess, right?
Yeah, I'm probably more busier than I really want to be, to tell you the truth.
And you're still a one-man show?
Just a one-man show.
Have you thought about bringing anybody on to get you through the orders?
I've always had people ask me to apprentice them. And again, I'm not saying I'm anything great by any means. Mm-hmm. I really don't have that ego.
And you've got a lot of people that think you're pretty great.
Well, I appreciate that. But I've had people ask me, you know, would you apprentice me, stuff like that. And the answer has always been no. And it's not because I dislike them or I don't think they don't have it, whatever the case may be. I just don't want that at that time. Okay. There will be a time that I will teach somebody or hopefully many people. Mm-hmm. But I just don't want to do that right now. I just want to cross that bridge.
No, like I said, get it.
You know, because, you know, I was with Cameron's. I had a great experience. I learned a lot because Ed really taught me a lot. Mm-hmm. There's no ifs, no buts.
That's the man.
Yeah. I mean, Ed, I've been, you know, now that I'm no longer with Cameron's, I probably talk to that man now more than I did when I sat with him like 5 feet away. And like I said, I go to Christmas with him, dinner, Thanksgiving with him.
He's excited about your success.
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool.
We talk all, at least he's like my dad.
Yeah.
So I have a lot to thank to him and to the other business partner as well that brought all this together. Mm-hmm. And there's another guy named P. Single that you really don't hear too much about. But if you've been around the business, you know P. Single. He definitely knows his stuff. There's no ifs, no buts about it.
Nice.
So I owe him a lot as well. And there's other people that help too. You know, you got Jeremy Reed, you got Brandon Bunker. You know, anytime I pick up the phone and I have a question, I can always ask them. So it's been good, man.
Wow. What's next for you?
Work. Just more work. I mean,
you know, you have another vacation anytime in the future. You're just going to keep grinding it out.
Well, I'm definitely going to be grinding it out for a while. So I'm going to start shooting again.
Good.
Right now, I got some tennis elbow going on, or shooter's elbow, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So that's been really bad. I mean, trying to hold anything in this hand sucks right now. Mm-hmm. But it's getting better. So I was hoping to start shooting this month in February, but that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So hopefully sometime in March, I'll be able to start shooting. Then I'll be able to start going back to the matches. And because I really do love the sport.
Right.
I really do. I love the competition. I love shooting. I love hanging out with the guys and girls. I like making fun of them, but I expect them to make fun of me as well.
Right.
And I enjoy that. I really do. So like last year was just mostly working, and now it's, you know, I kind of want to get back to that.
Right.
So if anything, I guess to answer your question would be work, and definitely start adding the shooting part.
Right. Makes sense. Makes sense. Well, Eddie, thank you so much for sitting down with me and kind of telling me a little history and a lot of history about where you're at and now and where it took to get there. And it seems like all it's hard work and dedication and loyalty to yourself with integrity. Pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me, man.
Man, it's neat. I think a lot of people needed to kind of hear, you know, just the story of, you know, how this gun builder just said, you know, I'm not doing this anymore, and said, think I'm going to have to build guns again.
It's been good, man. It's a good life.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations to you. Thank you so much for watching or listening into this episode of Hunters HD Go Behind the Lens. If you have any questions for Eddie, feel free to email me at info@huntershdgo.com. And until next time, we'll see you at the range soon. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you.
For a complete written transcript of the Dr. Bill Show, go online to www.icarusmusic.com.
And welcome back to the Dr. Bill Show. Let's go to a caller who seems to be having issues communicating with his girlfriend. Caller?
Yeah, I'd had this problem with my girlfriend. She kind of broke up with me. I've been doing everything right. Everything's been going great. We went out. We've gone out for, I don't know, I'd say a good 5-6 months. Everything's good. I mean...
But son, you've got to use communication.
I've done that. I mean, what else can I do? I mean, seriously, I mean, like...
Son. Some girls are just bitches.